Welcome to The Sound of Economics. I'm Giuseppe Porcaro, and I'm bringing you this podcast from Bruegel, the Brussels-based think tank specialized in economics and economic policy. In this episode, we will be looking at the issue of migration, with a focus on the European Union and labor mobility. As we know, in Europe, anti-immigration sentiment is on the rise because of the perception that immigration is taking away jobs and benefits from people. Migrants can contribute to the overall increase in the workforce in different EU countries, the labor market, and social integration outcomes. But what is the real impact of migration? What are the economic challenges for migrants, and how these affect issues related to integration in the European Union? In this episode, I would like to explore this question with our guests, which are Maria De Mertzis, the Deputy Director of Bruegel, Samuel Engblom, the Policy Director of the Swedish Confederation of Professional Employees, Anna Ilina, the Division Chief of the International Monetary Fund, and Alessandra Venturini, the Deputy Director of the Migration Policy Center at the Robert Schuman Center for Advanced Studies of the European University Institute in Florence. And I will start with Alessandra to give us a little bit of her first thought on this very challenging question.
Okay, thank you very much. Migrants are wrongly perceived as a competitor. There is a thousand articles trying to test the effect of migration in the labor market. They show in all the cases in all European countries they are mailing complement, or at least there is not a negative effect, nor on the wage, and very little on the employment. There are many specific cases of absolute complementarity, especially for women working, highly skilled women worker, migrant women working in the house as caregiver, as domestic worker, are complement, allows women to work more. This is happening in UK, in Italy, in Spain, in all European countries. However, the perception of the individual is not so open. They always have afraid that there is a competition. And so probably the message, also on the welfare state, the research has shown clearly that migrants, of course, are more eligible. So they are in the lower bracket of the income distribution, so they are poor. But they take up less benefits than the natives with the same characteristics. So they're less costly for the welfare state. At the aggregate level, migrants contribute to the production, contribute to the welfare state more than what they take off. However, the feeling is of the opposite. So the question would be why there is this mismatch between the research results and the perception of people.
Thank you, Alessandra. Samuel, what do you think?
I think the impact of migration on labour markets is also very much dependent upon the labour market institutions of that country, the policy choices that politicians make in that immediate situation, and of course the labour market situation. If I look at my own country, Sweden, which in 2015 accepted 163,000 asylum seekers, which was per capita more than other European countries, but did that in a situation where we have a very good labour market, where we have, I think, institutions from before that they need to be improved, but we have basic institutions both to make sure that immigrants can be integrated into the labour market and also to, I think, contain some of these sort of the potential negative effects. If we have collective bargaining coverage of 90%, of course that reduces the risk that immigrants will find themselves in very low paid work in the informal sector, for example. So that kind of institutions, I think, matter a lot when it comes to the impact the migration has on the labor market in a specific country.
Yeah, you're right. The situation of specific countries is essential to understand the different ways that the migration is both perceived but also managed. And on this, I would like to ask Anna about the fact that within the European Union, we not only have receiving countries, but we also have sending countries of migration. What is your analysis on this specific kind of sets of countries?
In Europe, there's an example of intra-European migration wave. that started in the early 1990s from Eastern Europe to Western Europe and continued over the last 25 years, which on the receiving side could be viewed as an example of very successful integration. So there are many studies now that show that this migration has increased per capita income levels in the receiving countries and in the EU as a whole. So you could look at this as a positive example from that perspective. So what we were also interested in, though, and that was not really something that received a lot of attention, was to understand the impact of this large and persistent wave of outward migration from Eastern Europe on the sending countries. So from the sending countries' perspective, what happened was that within a relatively, well, it's not a short period of time, relatively speaking, short period of time, 20, 25 years, over 20 million people left the region, which is roughly equivalent to a combined population of the Czech Republic and Hungary. So the numbers are actually quite large. So we thought that, well, you know, this had to have some impact on the economic potential of this country. So we took a closer look at it, and we tried to understand how this huge labor outflow affected economic outcomes in different countries. And basically what we found was that in many cases, this indeed drained labor resources, and especially in the skilled segment. It also had a negative effect on labor productivity. In addition, it put upward pressure on wages. And ultimately, this led to some dampening effect on GDP growth and on GDP per capita growth. And therefore, it sort of hampered convergence, slowed convergence to advanced Europe as well.
Maria.
So I'd like to sort of pick up from where Anna left in this respect. I mean, I think there is a consensus, if not near consensus, that immigration and labor mobility is a good thing for the receiving countries. But as we heard from Anna, I think the effects on the sending countries are very far from agreed upon, and if not, actually negative. And I think this is an important issue because in the context of the EU, the sending countries are also the countries that are in the catch-up process. So we find now a phenomenon that is actually reversing this process, is reversing the process of convergence with long-lasting effects. So for me, the challenge is going to be how do we facilitate the positive effects of migration on the receiving countries but without necessarily jeopardizing the process of convergence, which is really much the principle behind the EU.
Okay, very well. But in these regards, I think that the next question to follow up to your reflection is to ask ourselves what kind of policies would help to make immigration work and this perception work better, and so on. So what do you think is the impact on specific policies, such as fiscal welfare or labor market policies? What is the kind of policies that would help migration work?
Well, I think the important thing here is to try and redress the balance of the emphasis that we actually put on this discussion. Most of the discussion nowadays is about integration and about ensuring that the people who move from one area to the other are properly integrated in the destination of this process. But if we are to believe the analysis that Anna just described, then we need to refocus a little bit the attention of this issue and also give equal or a little bit more, if not equal, emphasis on this, on the point of actually convergence, ensuring that either some of these people actually are repatriated at some point and therefore the country of origin does not lose all this talent that originally was actually drained, and secondly, maybe opening up to immigration perhaps from third countries to try and sort of rebalance the lack of talent that these countries necessarily now have. So policies need to be focused a little bit more, I think, in order to address that balance.
Alessandra, do you want to add something about that?
Yes, I would like just to look at, for instance, the Polish case. Okoski, who is a demographer of Poland, is called interrupted migration because Polish migrants is one of the largest of flow. They have two big waves of migration, but they stay away for a short time after they come back. So I think that there are already many safe valves in this type of drain of human capital. The sociological study, they show that Polish people go around to see the world, not just because they want to invest. Many of them will come back. So this is the idea, is that, of course, there are cases like Romania, also Romanian citizens, they went around, they remained there, but as soon as there was the recession, they were the first one to go back. So there is a lot of internal mobility. Internal human mobility is also circular mobility. So we should, of course, try to invest in integrating them in the country destination, but they have much higher human capital than people coming from non-member states.
I think it's important to draw the right policy conclusions from these findings. And I think that one conclusion that should not be drawn is that we should limit free movement of workers within the EU. I mean, that I think that must be clear that that is not the adequate response. I think the response should be, of course, to what can be done in the center countries to improve conditions there, and also which Alessandra mentioned, the possibility of circular migration. What kind of opportunities are there for people to come back and bring back skills that they have earned in other countries? They might be, some people might have gone, young people might go away and work in the service sector, rather low-skilled jobs in, for example, the UK, but then come back with language skills.
Exactly.
Or also with other ideas of how to run a business. Than those that are in connections. And I think that should probably be the policy response, is to promote that kind of migration, rather than to say, look, now we have a case for against the free movement of workers.
For the European Union as a whole is the reason why there shouldn't be any, you know, restrictions. And I think the question here is only about how to make sure that those that have not benefited from this process, or those regions that kind of were left behind, could be brought up.
Just would like to ask if there is like some final comments from the rest of the guests.
The imbalances that migration are creating are not only east-west, but also north-south, because the South European country has a very high outflow, highly skilled. So I think that is a problem of convergence of all European countries. So it's a structural problem of Europe. In addition, the South European countries have an outflow of highly skilled and an inflow of low-skilled migrants. In this way, non-member state migration, foreign migrants, non-European migrants, are all employed in low-skilled jobs. In this way, they slow down the modernization, the innovation of the South European economy.
I think, as Alessandra mentioned, that what happens on the local level is very important, at least not politically, but also practically. In Sweden, we had a situation where, as I said, we have a good labour market, but we also have a big housing shortage since before. And when then 163,000 people came in 1 year and you have to find housing, it was more about where is there housing, more than so then considering, okay, in what region would it be optimal to place this person from a labour market perspective or from a perspective of education, which meant that in a small village where there happened to be an abandoned hotel. Well, there you could put 100 or 200,000 people. And of course, for the 50 people living in the village, that wasn't a huge impact. But then, of course, on the national level, that would not be there. So then, of course, if you have this kind of situation where there's a lot of people coming at once, of course, you will have to go into that kind of solutions. But of course, I think it's important to try to within countries, sort of make sure that you divide that migrants come to different areas, also to municipalities that are, I mean, actually the municipalities in Sweden that receive the least are the most wealthy, right? They should come there as well. And also, of course, the same thing, the same kind of distribution should be done in Europe, which you have failed with. It's a commitment that we have as a nation or as the European Union, and then we should actually act responsibly together.
Well, just to say one last thing, that I think this is a very useful suggestion to have a sort of a local approach to the problem. I think that's certainly something that, you know, very concretely could really help us address some of these issues. At the same time, I think the labour mobility is a European Union problem. And if you compound that also with the refugee crisis, I think this is going to be one of the things that will test the resilience of the EU as an architectural edifice rather than just as a general concept.
Absolutely. And as you say, Maria, this is actually a key issue that would be continue to be discussed. We hope that with this small discussion in this episode of The Sound of Economics, it can further it up and can lead to new ideas and to new reflections and analysis on the topic. So definitely it's not something that can be rounded up and closed down. That brings us to the end of this episode. And thanks for listening to The Sound of Economics. You will find further analysis by Bruegel scholars about migration on our website, www.bruegel.org. We hope you join us again for The Sound of Economics. See you next time.